Hello, you're listening to Academy of Blues, a Chelsea FC podcast. Academy of Blues is a Chelsea FC podcast brought to you from LA in California. This very moment, you're listening to the podcast of all podcasts, an episode where we relive our greatest night in Europe. There are football games that you can't afford to lose, and then there are football games that you simply must win. Well, this was beyond that. This was a football game that losing would have soured the careers of owners, board members, and legendary players. We'll be looking at the heroes and zeros of the 2012 Champions League final, which was played on May 19th, 8 years ago. This was a night where the mighty Blues of London went in as underdogs and came out, well, you'll have to wait to find out. Is it written in the stars? Is it destiny and prophecy fulfilled? How is it that a season that started with so much doom and gloom could potentially end as memorable as this? To get details and so much more, I welcome an avid Chelsea evangelist who's turned his whole family, including his dog, into Chelsea fanatics. That's right, with me today is the unwavering and assured voice of one Daniel Gonzalez, a Chelsea fan whose finest night in podcasting will surely be tonight. Daniel, how are you?
I'm doing pretty good. That's a high bar.
It is a high bar. This better be your best.
It's going to be the best. How can it not be?
I'm so excited about this episode because this has to be one of my favorite Chelsea games that I've ever been able to watch live. And so to be able to talk about it, I already have this like big old smile on my face and I just can't wait. Before we jump into that, there's been some big news. And again, listeners, you might be listening to this just a few days after we actually record it, but we are so excited about it that we're going to talk about it. The Premier League has finally decided on when it is going to resume football again.
Funny enough, that news came out the exact day that we released last episode, so we had no chance to talk about it at all.
It happens. That's what happens when you're kind of going week to week and you're a little bit behind on your podcasting. You get to miss out on some of the most recent news that's going on. But that podcast didn't need, that episode didn't need anything else because we had so much to talk about already.
3 weeks from a little bit around that, around
yeah,
3 weeks.
About two weeks. I'm sorry, so. About 3 weeks.
Something like that. We're not known for our math here on the Academy of Blues.
No, we're not. We don't even know how to use a calendar. So
we don't know what day it is. We've been doing this forever.
Yeah. For me, one of the cool things is like, since mid-March, we've been absolutely starved when it comes to being able to watch live games. And beginning on June 17th, we are going to be so overfed because the way that they've scheduled it, it's so that there are games every single weekend. And then, so there are games for 6 weekends in a row. And for 3 weeks out of those 6 weeks, there's going to be midweek games. So at times, it's going to feel like there's a Premier League game every single day of the week.
There might be something like that.
Yeah.
I mean, so the Bundesliga came back a little bit earlier, and so they've been playing games, but it's kind of like, for me at least, it's kind of like when you're starving and you don't kind of realize how hungry you are and you have like a little bite of something and then it's taken away from you and you're like, wow, now I know how hungry I am. That's what it was like watching those games.
It was slightly worse for me because it was like being at a restaurant and they're taking forever to get your food out to you. And then the waiter finally comes out with what looks like it's your food. And then he just goes on to give it to the table next to you.
And you're like, they came after me.
Yeah.
I've been waiting so much longer.
So I'm definitely super excited. And for our listeners, what that means is beginning June 17th or beginning the restart of the Premier League, this podcast is actually going to focus on the most recent matches, including previews, reviews, and news. So we'll
be
able to.
Like we're supposed to do.
Like we're supposed to do. But there's been absolutely no previews to give to you, no reviews to give to you. We've been doing a little bit of news here and there, but not consistently. And so I'm excited to be able to start that. It's going to feel like a whole new chapter in our podcasting journey. So we'll see how it goes.
We might even be sad on this podcast because so far we've been reviewing great games, you know, Champions League glory and all that. We might have an episode where we're a little bit down. All right, so Mateos Gebrekristos, you are whatever age you are in 2012, May 19th, nearly 8 years ago, and you're sitting down and you're about to watch this Champions League final, Chelsea versus Bayern Munich. I believe there are four players that are out for us. So John Terry, Branislav Ivanovic, Raul Mireles.
Mireles, yeah.
There we go. I can never say that. And Ramirez. All out. It's a Chelsea lineup that includes the likes of David Luiz, Osingwa, Bertrand, Kalou. All, you know, professional players. All great players.
That's the best that we can say about them.
Still, Mikel is there. Lampard's there. Mata's there. Drogba's there. Cech is there. I just went through the entire lineup pretty much.
Right.
But you're looking at this lineup and you're looking at Bayern Munich. You know, Bayern Munich at their prime. This is a great Bayern Munich. This is a Robin and Ribery that are on the wings bringing it. This is a Mario Gomez, Thomas Müller, Manuel Neuer when he's the best keeper in the world. Lahm, one of the, probably the best right back in the world at this moment. This is Roberto Di Matteo versus one of Bayern's top managers of their club in ever. I can't pronounce his name, but
you have to try because we have a habit of mispronouncing names here. So
all right, let's try it out.
This is your opportunity.
Joop Heynckes.
Heineken.
Heineken. Joop Heineken.
His family has sponsored the Champions League for generations.
That's a good joke. So, pull it back to 8 years ago. What are you feeling looking at this lineup coming into this game?
The first feeling that I had was, I hope my mother's not home. Because you have to remember the fact that back then, the Champions League final was played on a Wednesday. I think in the time that you've been watching closely or watching following soccer closely, the Champions League final has been played on Saturdays, if I'm not mistaken. Back then, it just fell on Wednesdays. So it was on Wednesday at 1:30. I didn't get out of school until either 2 or 3. I can't remember. Probably 2. But I'm like, you know what? After lunch, and I was in high school at the time. After lunch, I was like, you know what? There's no way that I'm going to be able to miss the first 30 minutes of the game or the first hour of the game. So I left school a little early that day.
Oh, wow.
I was on sick leave. You know, I was on the injured players list. I was one of the players suspended for Chelsea that day. So I went home and I remember running home, opened up my laptop to find out what the lineup was. It was more or less what I expected with the exception of Ryan Bertrand. Now, Ryan Bertrand was barely ever used for Chelsea because in the time that he was a Chelsea player, Ashley Cole was the one who was getting all the games. And so there was no reason for him to start because he was nowhere near as good as Ashley Cole. And then there were even some games where Ashley Cole might have been benched or injured and Joseph Osingwa was moved to left back to play at left back for that game. So he was a player who was just in the periphery of every manager that was around at the time.
For context, Ryan Bertrand, left back.
Yep.
Who was 22 at the time.
Right.
And that spot was, as you said, held down by Ashley Cole, Chelsea legend. Would
absolutely
you say that? Yes.
Absolutely.
Yes. Chelsea the legend who just cemented that throughout his career as his spot, the best left back in England.
Yeah.
And probably in the world at that time as well.
But Ryan Bertrand had actually never ever played a Champions League game for Chelsea. So his Champions League debut came in the Champions League final and he started it. And he played, I think he played somewhere close to 90 minutes.
He was subbed at the 73rd minute.
So 73rd minute.
So he played a lot of the game in the left wing, so not even in his position.
Right. So I wasn't surprised all that much by the lineup. Definitely didn't feel confident because, again, four players gone. And then even within our starting lineup, our two center backs were like playing with hamstring injuries or whatever else. So there was like a lot of problems just running across that entire team, which didn't feel great.
So getting on to what actually happened. The match starts. And if you look at the stats for this match, it's actually Bayern Munich 56% possession and Chelsea 44% possession. It doesn't feel like that.
It does not feel like that.
Watching this game, it's a Bayern chance after Bayern chance. Chelsea chance,
Bayern
chance, Bayern chance, Bayern chance. I haven't seen the match or highlights or anything like that in like a year. I tend to watch it once a year now. So it's been a while. I didn't quite remember everything, but it is actually incredible. There's a Robin chance that Cech actually deflects into the frame of the goal with his legs.
Yep.
Ashley Cole blocks like a million. I lose count of how many times Ashley Cole is there. Every single cross they put in there, Ashley Cole's there to contest it.
That was Ashley Cole's best performance for Chelsea ever.
Absolutely. So we're going to gloss over a little bit of the halftime because I absolutely invite everybody who's listening to this to go back and watch the highlights, watch the game if you can, if you have a way to watch that, because despite the fact that this is a low-scoring game, for a final, it's nerve-wracking as a child. Like, even knowing what was happening, I was, like, biting my nails watching this game because I was like, there's no way Chelsea can actually come back from this. But halftime, Chelsea have had maybe one shot on target compared to Bayern's, like, 15 shots or so during this match.
Right.
Are you starting to feel better at this point?
No, not necessarily. Specifically because when you look at the chances that Bayern had and the chances that the one chance that Chelsea had, it's night and day what kind of chances they were. Bayern, that you had Robin and Ribery running at our defenders, being like wanting to dribble through everybody and take shots. And then for Chelsea, our best chance came from like a Drogba layoff to Lampard, who sets it up for Kalou. And it's this like very tame shot that Neuer easily saves in his near post. So it did not feel good because it's like, oh my goodness, we've been defending this entire time. And they gave us absolutely no opportunities on the counter. They were just all over us from the beginning of that first half until the end.
I mean, that's kind of funny to me to imagine. Like, you're watching this game and you're just like in a cold sweat the entire time.
Yeah.
And the game's happening in front of you and you're watching it and you're processing it and you know what's happening, but you don't really know what's happening because you're so fearful for the outcome.
Right.
I mean, in a way, the fact that you had that like emotion that I'm guessing that you had during this match, it kind of means that you at least had a little bit of hope. Because if you had no hope at all, you would have just given up on the game.
Right.
You would have just been watching it was like nothing. But exactly. This is their chance. This is the first time Chelsea have been in the final since 2008.
The only thing was, it was just hard to see where a Chelsea goal could come from in this game because Bayern were so dominant. The one thing that we didn't mention in this episode, but we did mention last week's episode, was the fact that for Bayern Munich, this was a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity to be able to win the Champions League in Munich, win the Champions League at their own stadium.
I can't believe we forgot to mention that at the start of this.
For those of you who don't know, the Champions League final isn't played over two games. It's only played over one game. And the final, or the destination, the final, what stadium it's played in, is decided years before it actually takes place so that it's fair and it's as neutral as possible. So typically what you'll have is, you know, it'll be Barcelona against some Italian team, and the Champions League final might be in England, in London. So you have that going on. But in this particular year, Bayern Munich had signed up, or they had gotten the favor to be able to host the Champions League final, and their team was good enough to make the Champions League final. And so they would have been the first team ever they would have been the first team since the Champions League became the Champions League, the UEFA Champions League, to be able to play the final and win it at their own stadium. No team has been able to play the final at their own stadium before or since. So this was huge for them. And if you looked at the stadium, it was all red. It was just Bayern Munich fans. And there was a small corner of Chelsea fans.
The little ones that they let in.
Yeah, exactly. Just so that we didn't feel bad. But it was, that's definitely the kind of night that it was. And so Bayern Munich, I'm sure, were confident because they're playing at home. Who gets to play a Champions League final at home? No one does. So I'm sure they were feeling confident. And the way that they played in that game, they definitely played like they were home because they had a majority of the possession. The crowd was behind them with every touch and every pass that they made. The crowd cheered. And then every time a Chelsea player was on the ball, the crowd would just go wild until Bayern won the ball back again. And so it was definitely a nerve-wracking game from beginning all the way until the end.
Oh, it is kind of hard to talk about what happens during this match just because we're not exaggerating it. It is Bayern chance after Bayern chance,
yeah.
But it's not those super close chances. You know, it's those chances that are almost there. The closest they do come, I think, is that Petrček save where he deflects it into the bar,
right,
and it comes back down. But other than that, they don't have too many chances where there's no chances where they miss or it's saved and you think, wow, that should have gone in. They had like a lot of half chances during this match. But we had to come to it. 83rd minute, Toni Kroos crosses it from the left side over to Thomas Müller, who has this odd header. I think, personally.
Yeah.
It's this strange, he heads it straight to the ground.
Yep.
It goes up and over Petrček, who kind of has this hesitation about it, because it does go straight to the ground and then it goes up and goes into this tiny little spot between his fingertips and the, do you call it the bar?
The bar.
The crossbar. Yeah. Between his fingertips and the bar, and it barely sneaks in. It's the 83rd minute. That's pretty much the end of the game.
It's almost the end of the game. It's 7 minutes from time.
Thomas Müller scores at home, and they celebrate like they've won the Champions League final.
Yep.
Because they pretty much have at this point. Maddie, 8 years ago, did you die?
I did. At that point? I did. I was dead for 5 minutes. I was definitely dead for 5 minutes.
What did you think about this goal?
It was so disappointing. It was especially disappointing because it was so hard to see a comeback for us. It was so hard to see where a goal would come from because, again, they'd been dominating the game so much.
One more side note that I almost forgot to mention. This came out, like, I don't know, maybe a week ago? Or I think it was the same day that that anniversary, May 19th, 2020. Drogba says that he asks 23-year-old Juan Mata, please help me win the Champions League. And Juan Mata says to him, man, you're crazy. You're Didier Drogba. You're going to help me win the Champions League. To which Drogba said, I've been here 8 years and never won it. You're the one that's going to help us win. I'll give you a present if we win the Champions League. At the end of February, they talked about this. It's May. Thomas Müller has just scored the 83rd minute. Everything is going downhill. And what happens 5 minutes later, Mateos?
5 minutes later, arguably one of the biggest headers ever scored by a Chelsea player. It might be the biggest header, but if you go back to episode 2, Billion Dollar Goal, we do make an argument for why it might not be the biggest header ever. But it's definite. If it's not the biggest header ever, it's got to be the second biggest header ever. Fernando Torres had just come into the game. He wins a corner kick because he's got this little bit of extra energy that most players don't. And he's out here to prove something. He wins a corner kick for us. Juan Mata takes it. And it was, the delivery was perfect. And Didier Drogba beats Jerome Boateng, who's a big dude.
Jerome Boateng, great center back.
Great center back. Huge guy. Beats him to the ball. And he has this like weird twisting header that he does where his body is like opening up as he's heading the ball, but it was the only header that could have beaten Manuel Neuer because it was a bullet header, and Neuer even like gets his hands on it, but he like pushes it up, but it was so powerful that it almost goes through his hands and into the roof of the net.
Neuer, big dude, big arms,
huge guy,
like an orangutan, that guy.
Yeah. He's actually the bad guy from the new Jungle Book, if you didn't know. The German version of it. He voiced King Louis.
And played him as well. They didn't need a suitor.
Yeah, he did the CGI and everything. But it goes in, and I mean, well, we
it's
said
hard
I was
to describe
dead 5 minutes,
the emotions
5 minutes
of this.
Before that I died. I came back to life then. Simple as that.
I'm just imagining you just splayed out on the couch or something, your eyes close, and as soon as that goal comes in, it's just like, and you just rise back up, given life. To say how against the run of play this game was, the overall statistics of this game, one Bayern goal, one Chelsea goal. 35 Bayern Munich shots to 9 Chelsea shots. Corner kicks, Bayern Munich 20, Chelsea 1. Chelsea had one corner kick at the 88th minute, and Drogba takes that moment and etches it in history forever.
Bayern Munich should have definitively won this game by 3-0. Because when you look at the chances that Bayern had and the chances that Chelsea had, it should have ended up being 3-0. This was a game where Bayern were incredibly unlucky, and at the same time, with the one opportunity that Chelsea got. As great as all their players were, and as accurate as everything was, they were incredibly lucky as they did it. And so when you're living through that moment, it's surreal. And for a lot of the Chelsea players, I know that that was the case, because you could tell in how they celebrated the Drogba goal. You can tell in their interviews afterwards, their body language when Müller scored. It just, everything tells that same story of, I can't believe Chelsea brought it back to 1-1.
It's why this is, you can quote me on this, soccer is the greatest sport in the world.
Come on.
Because this game has so much of that luck factor. Like, you can prepare as much as you want, you can do as much practice as you want, but you can never prepare for just having an off day, for the ball just not quite going and being a millimeter off. You can't practice for that sort of stuff. And everything comes together in this game almost seems to summarize what the season is like for Chelsea. Because slow start, looks like they're never going to come back from it. And at the very end, when all hope seems lost, Drogba comes through, a legend of a player comes through with an incredible header, a goal that just changes the fate of the club and changes the fate of the match. Yep. And it's poetic, for lack of a better term.
It's definitely poetic. And I think we talked about how luck was on our side. I think one of the things that was definitely in our favor was when the Chelsea goal was scored, as in how close to the 90-minute mark it was scored. Because if Bayern had, say, scored in the 34th minute and Chelsea scored in the 56th minute or whatever, and there is a decent amount of the game still to play, then Bayern would have been back on that horse of just, like, peppering us with shots and opportunities and creating. They would have been wanting to win it that much more. But the fact that it happened after this, like, huge moment of just, like, ecstasy they just had with taking the 1-0 lead, this didn't just bring them back to where they were before they went up 1-0. This brought them into, like, an emotional state that's way lower, because it definitely hurts so much more to know and feel like you're so close to winning it and then be like, oh no, we have to play another 30 minutes because of this one moment where we either lost focus or where they were just incredible for a few seconds.
So it's full time, 1-1. This game is a one game, so it's going to extra time first and then penalties. So 30 minutes of extra time, 2 50-minute halves. Game resets, Bayern Munich keep the ball. After 3 minutes, Chelsea legend, Didier Drogba, hero of, 20 minutes ago.
Yeah.
Striker, best striker of all time for Chelsea. Not a defender.
On the one hand, best striker that Chelsea has ever had, big game player and everything, right? On the other hand, had the worst Champions League final he could have had 4 years ago against Man United, because he got sent off and he wasn't able to take the decisive penalty kick.
So, once again, I feel like this match has so many moments of elation and then downtrodden, and elation and down, because in the 93rd minute, just after the extra time starts, Drogba fumbles into a Bayern Munich player in the penalty area and gives away a cheap nothing penalty. Yes, it's a player dribbling into your penalty area, but there is a Chelsea defender covering that. I believe it's Gary Cahill who is defending against that player, and Drogba just fumbles into the back of
Frank Ribery.
Yes, Frank Ribery. I was trying to remember the name. And fumbles into the back of Frank Ribery and gives away the dumbest penalty. Not the dumbest of all time, but just a dumb penalty. And do you remember this moment at all?
Absolutely. I was, like, so disappointed. And this is the second game in a row where Didier Drogba is giving up a penalty, because he did that against Barcelona in the semifinal second leg. And to me, this was like, oh no, it happened, because I hate playing defensively, because if you make any mistakes, it's either in your box or really close to it. So therefore, you almost always pay for it. And so this was going to be one of those cases where I'm like, no, all this work for nothing. And Drogba literally goes from hero to zero that moment.
In just a couple seconds.
Yep.
And so, it's Drogba. One of the things that people don't really talk about Drogba a lot now, because you kind of remember him as this big game player, this striker extraordinaire. He kind of whines a lot.
He does.
And he dives a lot too, as well.
He does.
We don't talk about that as much.
Sir dives a lot.
But after this, after this pretty obvious penalty, you could see him like kind of go, "Why? I don't understand." Like, this is, and it kind of sours your opinion of Drogba for just a second.
Yep.
He's that kind of guy.
Yep.
It goes up. Your opinion of him goes up and down as the game goes on as well.
Yep.
So, Robin steps up to take the penalty against Petr Cech, and side note, I love the way Petr Cech kind of prepares for a penalty, because I can't I'm doing it right now, but this is an audio only podcast, so nobody can actually see what I'm doing.
I can see, yeah. And that's really all that matters.
Yeah, this is just for us. Once we switch to, you know, full live video podcasting, then everybody will see.
Yeah.
But he does this like arm thing where he kind of like shifts his body and kind of like moves all over the place, and I have not seen another keeper does that, but I'm sure it throws off players
right
a ton. But
a lot of different keepers have different tactics that they do. Like, for example, if you look at the 2005 Champions League final where Liverpool was playing against AC Milan, Jerzy Dudek, the Liverpool goalkeeper, has this craziest thing that he does with his knees where he, like, I can't even describe it to you. You just have to watch it. Go watch the penalties to see how he was acting. And he ends up saving 3 penalties that game.
After you watch this penalty shootout.
After you watch this penalty shootout.
Which you watch after you watch this penalty that Robin takes.
Right. There's so much that you have to watch, and it's all penalties.
Penalties are great. They're and the then, worst and they're the best.
Yeah. And then there's Tim Krul, who plays for Newcastle now and played for the Dutch national team in the World Cup's past. And he does this thing where he jumps with his hands up right below the bar, and he like keeps hitting the bar. And that's one of the things that he does to appear as
much
bigger than mm-hmm. he actually is. And he has a great record when it comes to penalties. So, yeah, Petr Cech definitely has this thing where he, like, moves left and right while, like, flailing his arms in the air. And
which is worked. Amazing. I love seeing it. But Robin steps up, shoots to the right, and Petr Cech jumps. It's not a bad penalty. It's a strongly taken penalty. He doesn't telegraph too much, I think. I mean, I'm not a professional keeper, but it doesn't look like he telegraphs too much which way he's going. It's a fairly well-taken penalty, and Cech gets to it with room to spare, saves the penalty in the 93rd minute, third minute of extra time. And if that penalty goes in, that's the end. That's pretty much the end of this as well.
Quick note on that. I think that Bayern would have had a better chance of scoring it if they had someone like Müller or Ribéry or Schweinsteiger, really anyone of their like stacked team take it. The thing about Arjen Robben is, one, he's a former Chelsea player, and he spent time at Chelsea with Petr Cech, and so they knew one another. And then I go on to find out from Frank Lampard, you know, because Frank Lampard and I talk to each other on a daily basis.
He's going to be on the podcast next.
Yeah.
As well.
But Frank Lampard was talking about how Petr Cech actually, like, kept his friendship with Arjen Robben even after Robben left. And so this was a moment where two friends were up against one another. One was taking a penalty. The other was trying to save it. And surely enough, Petr Cech comes out on top and he saves it. This is the moment for me where I actually believe there is no way we're losing this game. There's no way we're losing this game, because after everything that we've been through in this game only and over the course of the season, to lose it, that wouldn't happen. We would have lost it a long time ago. So at this point, I'm like, we're doing it. We're doing it.
So the penalty gets taken. You go falling back down again into the pits of depression that only Chelsea can give you. And then Cech saves it
And I go right back up out of the pits of depression into ecstasy
and
again.
And just even higher than before.
I call up my t-shirt guy. I'm like, hey, I need you to print me a t-shirt that says Champions League winners. And
I want a tattoo right now on my back, on my stomach, everywhere you could put it that says Chelsea Champions League 2012.
Exactly. And there was still most of the
30 minutes
extra time
pretty
still
much
left to go.
Plus injury time on top of that extra time. So the rest of this goes on, and there are some more Bayern chances as well, undoubtedly. There are
a few, not as big as the chances that they had during the game, and I think it was a combination of them feeling really deflated by the penalty save and by the timing of Drogba's goal, and them just being tired, because this is a game that's happening at the end of a very long season, and not only did they play the full 90 minutes, but they have to play an extra 30 minutes on top of that. So at this point, a lot of the players are just, their legs are shredded and they're almost just done with it.
There's like kind of a thing that players do, and you can tell when they're tired, like physically and mentally, where the quality of shots they have just dip so far.
Yep.
And Arjen Robben takes a shot in the last few minutes where he's like kind of like, he does his cut inside thing, and he cuts like outside of the penalty area. And he takes a shot, and it's so far.
Yeah.
It reminds me of, if no one has seen it, back when Salah was, Mohamed Salah, you know, famed Liverpool star, was playing...
Chelsea legend Mohamed Salah.
was playing for Chelsea. He has this incredible shot that veers so far left, it almost like curves back around back into the other goal. So you should absolutely look that up if you have not seen it. Mohamed Salah, Chelsea missed shot. It's incredible. Robin has a shot that is fairly similar to that, where he cuts inside, he's right outside the penalty area, he takes a shot with that famed left foot, and it's not even close. It doesn't worry anybody as soon as he touches that ball.
Apparently, that ball ended up somewhere between like Holland and Denmark, just so far out of the stadium. It was horrendous.
So, the extra time ends. It goes on to penalties. The last time, in the mindset of being in 2012, the last time a Champions League final went to penalties was 4 years ago in 2008 when Chelsea and Manchester United played and Chelsea lost on penalties. I know you at this moment are feeling confident despite everything.
Despite everything, because I think it was just a case of we've gotten this far and we didn't expect to get this far. And so much bad happened that we somehow survived it that at this point, what's the worst thing that could happen, right?
Like even if you lose at this point, you got to a Champions League penalty shootout.
Right.
That's pretty good.
Yeah, we could leave with our heads held high because of how we were able to stand up against a Bayern team that was playing at home that had, you know, future World Cup winners, that had Frank Ribery, who I think almost won the Ballon d'Or in 2013, just a year later. So it was like at this point, they've got everything to lose. We've got very little to lose.
So, penalty start, Bayern captain Philipp Lahm steps up and sinks it. Petrček goes the right way, but just out of reach for him, and Philipp Lahm takes it 1-0 to Bayern Munich. Famed Drogba inspiration Juan Mata steps up to take the second one. Number 10 for Chelsea, one of the greats. I think he could have been a Chelsea legend for sure if he had stayed longer, if Jose Mourinho hadn't kicked him out of the
Chelsea
team.
He won the Chelsea Player of the Year that year.
2 years in a row. What a shame. Juan Mata, we miss you. Come back to Chelsea. Come to the Chelsea now. But Juan Mata steps up to take the second penalty, and unfortunately, it's saved.
I was definitely brought back down to earth from everything that had happened.
A roller coaster of emotions.
Absolutely.
At this point.
And Juan Mata was one of our free kick takers. He was our corner kick taker. So he was this, like, set piece dude, you know? And so I really think that he... should have scored it, and he would have scored it under most circumstances. But I think it was also just a case of just being so nervous. And the more nervous you are, the more keepers can read it. They feed off of players' nervousness. They're like sharks. They smell blood when a player is nervous or doesn't look very sure as to which way they're going to go. And the other thing that we didn't mention going into penalties was Bayern Munich won the coin toss, which meant that they got to choose which goal that the penalty shootout would take place in, and they picked a goal where pretty much the entire, like, when they picked the goal who had Bayern fans right behind it and all around it. And so it was like Chelsea fans had to watch literally from the opposite side of the field as all of this happened. And so I'm sure as a Chelsea player, as you're stepping up to it and you're seeing thousands upon thousands of Bayern Munich fans looking into your eyes and I'm sure yelling and screaming mean and obscene things, then I just say, thank God it wasn't me there.
And yeah, absolutely. And so Chelsea, one of the last most important Champions League penalties they took was that Champions League final. The last penalties that Bayern Munich played was just last game, where they beat a Jose Mourinho-led Real Madrid in the semifinals on penalties. So they were used to this.
Right.
They had just done this. They were cool under pressure. They're Germans, so
typically,
they don't have emotions.
They just... they,
sorry,
Germans. Who's listening from Germany. Sorry.
We found out your secret.
Yeah. You have no emotions. So you can't even get offended by this because you have no emotions. But I would also say that just historically, when England and Germany play one against one another, Germany wins, and when an English club and a German club play against one another, a German club wins, and specifically if they go into penalties, German clubs almost always win.
England teams not well known for their penalties,
right,
for their composure under pressure, at least not since like the 50s or something like that. So Juan Mata misses his. Mario Gomez steps up to take the next one for Bayern Munich, and once again, Petrček dives the right way, and once again, Bayern scores. At this point, it is 2-0 on penalties. Everything's crashing. Everything's going downhill. This is the end. Chelsea's going to dissolve as a club. Abramovich is going to sell the club. It's all going to go.
We're just going to go merge with Arsenal or something.
Yeah, and... it's going to be like a half and half scarf, but with clubs, which don't buy those.
Please don't buy those. Yep, 2-0 Bayern with two shots for them, one shot for us. So that can only mean one thing. This next one has to go in, and we cannot afford to miss any more penalties.
And who do you choose? You know, you're looking at this Chelsea team. Who do you choose to be the cool, under-pressure person, the person who's going to step up and keep the team from falling under?
Frank Lampard.
Yes.
100%.
Makes sense. Unfortunately, David Luiz is second on the penalty takers list.
And he's going up, and I'm like, oh no. Why would we do that? Why did Robbie Di Matteo pick David Luiz? Why would he even let him take penalties? I would have sent him to the dressing room. You can't even be on the field.
Sometimes it's the most surprising players.
Yeah.
So David Luiz steps up. Not really steps up, because when the ref blows the whistle, David Luiz is almost not on screen.
Right.
He's standing so far back from it, it looks like he's going to run away
right,
and just leave the match altogether. But David Luiz does what David Luiz does and just sprints at that ball. He has eyes for nothing but that ball and just kicks it with all his might. And I think it does confuse Neuer because, you know, with other players, there's tells, there's ticks, there's kind of things that they do and you kind of like can tell what they're going to do. David Luiz is just like he's like a shark,
yeah,
but less smart. He just goes in a straight line until he hits something. And if it happens to be the ball, so be it.
Yeah.
If it happens to be a player, so be it as well. Fortunately, this time, it's the ball.
If you want to know how much distance David Luiz covered in running up to that ball, I encourage you to watch Fast and Furious 6. At the very end, in the big final fight scene, there's an airport runway that seems to go on forever and ever and ever. I think they spent about 10 minutes fighting in a plane that was getting ready to take off at a runway. That's what it felt like. David Luiz he took ages to get up to that ball. But boy, did he catch that ball, because there's no way that Neuer, you could have had two keepers in there and they wouldn't have been able to save it.
That ball is put in the perfect spot. It is like right near the corner. It's invisible as it flies through the screen because of how fast it's going. You can tell that this is like the kind of penalty that if it goes over, it very easily could have gone over the bar and everybody would have screamed at him and yelled at him and that would have been the end. But it doesn't. It goes in and everyone thinks, that was amazing, David Luiz, take our penalties forever.
Yeah.
That was incredible. And I think it also has a part to play in how the kind of penalties go moving forward, because penalties are as much about mentality as they are about anything else.
Mm-hmm.
If anything, they're even more about the way that goes. It's almost like a game within the penalties.
Right.
How things swing back and forth.
Right.
And at that moment, when you're 2-0 down, you need somebody who has the unshakable confidence, the almost naive confidence of someone like David Luiz.
That is the perfect word for his level of confidence.
Naive and confidence.
Because we look at him and we're like, David, you should not have that much confidence.
I look at him and think, David, maybe you shouldn't be a soccer player. I don't know. But he goes on and he does it.
A clown is what he should be.
He never has the belief that he's not going to do it.
Right.
During this entire run-up, a year takes place between when he starts running and when he hits the ball. And during that entire time, he knows he's going to do it every time. And I think that definitely put confidence into the rest of the Chelsea players.
Without a doubt.
And shook us. Maybe Manuel Neuer as well, because he looks at this and thinks, man, this guy has no fear. He just runs up and smashes it in with no fear of what I can do to stop it. And I could not have stopped that. Maybe this is not the
right
end of this match. But after that, so David Luiz sinks his. It's 2-1 to Bayern. Neuer himself steps up to take the third penalty for Bayern, the keeper taking a penalty against another keeper.
I despise Neuer. He is the Jose Mourinho of keepers for me. My favorite Neuer highlight of my entire life was when he was caught 70 yards away from his goal in the Germany against North Korea game in 2018, and Son Heung-min was able to score on him, and Germany were sent home because he's Manuel Neuer and he loves to leave his goal. But a lot of times when he leaves his goal to do whatever he wants to do, it pays off for him. So he just ends up looking good. But I think he is, from what I can tell, he's arrogant and just my least favorite German out there. And
sorry, Germans, we don't hate you.
We love Rudiger. He's a German.
It's true. Look at that. We have one German friend. We don't hate Germans.
We love Pulisic, who spent a lot of time in Germany.
Yeah. We're not against Germans. We like Germans. Sorry. But we just don't like Neuer.
We do not like Neuer. But he does take his penalty well because he scores it.
Once again, Petr Cech goes the right way.
Yep. That is now, three times in a row that he goes the right way? Four times if you include the Robin penalty in extra time?
So far, he's just so far away. He's just close enough to get that penalty, but he's not quite doing it.
Which I wonder how much that also played into messing with the Bayern Munich players' confidence. Because if you have a keeper and he saved one already, and he is almost saving every single one that gets shot, then I'm sure, and you're about to go up in, after two takes or whatever, I'm sure that that messes with you. And so the fact that he was going the right way was huge, even though he wasn't necessarily saving them.
Yeah, especially, and that Neuer goal, he was getting closer and closer and closer. And so for the third one, who do you now trust to step up and keep it from going down once again?
Super Frank.
This time it is Frank Lampard who steps up to take the third penalty. And if you were listening to our last episode, we did a quiz about who scored the most penalties for Chelsea in the Premier League. It was Frank Lampard. And almost certainly he does score this one. It goes up towards, it goes high up towards the roof of the net. And Neuer does he get a hand?
Neuer does not get a hand to it. He does not get anywhere close to it because of how much power Frank Lampard puts in that thing.
Yeah, that's another shot that just ripples the net.
Yeah.
That just hits it, and you can almost think that this net's going to just rip, and the ball will just keep going. It won't be stopped. It'll hit some Bayern Munich fan in the stands.
Which would have been okay.
Yeah.
We love Germans.
Sorry, Germans. We're not trying to do anything. So, Frank Lampard takes that third penalty and knocks it right in. Do you remember this penalty shootout?
I do, actually.
Penalty for penalty?
I don't remember the ones that Bayern scored, except for the one that Neuer scored. I remember every single Chelsea one. I remember the run-up. I remember how I was feeling after each one.
To a T.
Yep.
At this point, it is 3-2. Bayern is still ahead
mm-hmm.
because Chelsea have missed one with Mata's first one. So the fourth kicker take comes up. It is a Croatian player who I did not know before we started doing this podcast. Let me try it. Do you know how to pronounce his name?
I do.
Okay, let me try it.
You got to try it first, yeah.
Ivica Olic. Olic. Olic.
Ivica Olic.
Ivica Olic. It's always itch.
Yeah.
With those Croatians.
With those Croats.
So, Ivica Olic steps up to take this penalty.
Petr Cech saves. He goes the right way for the fourth time in a row in this penalty shootout, and he saves it. Now, it wasn't the greatest penalty by Olic, and I think this is where I do feel like the fact that Cech had saved one earlier in the game, and he's been going the right way every time, this is where I think it kind of messed with his mind, because the penalty itself just wasn't a great penalty, and how he was going to shoot it was a little bit advertised, like you could see it coming, mm-hmm. But great on Petr Cech for being able to do that, for forcing his opponent to do that.
And it's a good save, too. It's a one-handed save. He kind of, swings his arm. Once again, I am demonstrating this physically. But he swings his arm up and around, and he palms it away with one hand, a strong hand, to take out that penalty. And that's a great save.
Fantastic save.
I wish we had a keeper like that now, with that nice helmet to be around now.
And you know what? The real hero of this game is that helmet, because Bayern players wouldn't have played against a player wearing a helmet. So I'm sure that was confusing. Are we playing rugby now? Anyways, we love Germans.
We're on so many odd side notes for this penalty shootout. So, Petr Cech saves Ivica Olic's fourth penalty, and now it is tied. And who to step up? Or not yet. It's not quite tied.
But we have to score
Chelsea
it to tie
have
it.
A chance yep. to step up and tie it. And it's none other than Ashley Cole,
yep.
left back, who steps up. And I did not... The funny thing about penalties is you kind of get to see how everyone does with penalties. Because usually there's a designated penalty take. Usually there's a dedicated penalty taker within the team who takes every penalty or most penalties. And if they're not there, there might be one other player who's
right.
the second for that. Chelsea, it's always been Frank Lampard. Who was the second at that time?
Drogba. You say?
Drogba?
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely cool under pressure.
Yep.
I say absolutely a lot, don't I?
I say incredibly a lot.
Yeah, well,
it's okay.
They're positive words.
Yeah, they are.
So Ashley Cole steps up, and I've never seen Ashley Cole take a penalty.
I don't think I had either, because...
What did you think? You remember this.
So here's the thing. I always like it when defenders take penalties, because when you think about scoring opportunities, strikers, when they don't score, there is this little thing in the back of their heads that goes... It's okay. I'm going to get another opportunity now, and I will score it. So if I make a mistake with this one, it's okay. Now, obviously, that doesn't apply in a penalty shootout, but just generally how the mentality of a player works, it's exactly that way. I know it's the case with me playing in midfield or closer to strikers or a more offensive position. I've always felt like, oh, you miss it this time? You just get your head in the game, try it again. And like, there's been times where I've tried the exact same shot twice, and the second time it comes off. So, but with defenders, like I said, typically with defenders, if they make a mistake, they end up conceding. If they make a mistake, there's not another opportunity that comes for the rest of this game and lots of times for many games to come, which is why we see, you know, defenders score 4 or 5 at the most in a season. And so I like it when defenders go up, because I think that they have much better heads under pressure than strikers do. Now, that being said, I had no idea how Ashley Cole would take his penalty, and the first penalty, which was saved for us, was taken by a left-footed player, so I did not like that we had another left-footed player going in there. I thought that Neuer would have been able to predict it, and so I was a little bit more nervous about that one than the rest of them, besides the David Luiz one. But Ashley Cole goes up, and...
Neuer does go the right way.
He does.
The ball goes into the net. It's a low shot, kind of going towards the middle. So I think Neuer, if he had jumped, if he had like jumped for it before Ashley Cole takes the shot, and he kind of waits a little bit to try to guess which way Ashley Cole's going to go. If he had just taken a guess and gone for it, he could have saved it. But Ashley Cole takes a nice, solid penalty that goes in. Neuer doesn't get close to it, and it's all tied up.
Yeah.
3-3.
That penalty, that ball goes and hits the inside of Neuer's net, or the side netting on the inside of it. And so that would have been really, really hard for him to get. 3-3.
So it's all tied up. You need a Bayern player to keep calm under pressure. You need a German, for sure, to step up for this one. And who else but Bastian Schweinsteiger.
Hey, you did that well.
Thanks. He played in MLS for the Chicago Fire.
He did.
So I have seen him play. I watched Bastian Schweinsteiger play. And I love his name. I say it as often as I can.
Right. If there is a more German name, please come forward and let us know. Because that is the most German name I have ever heard in my entire life.
And I like him. What do you think of Bastian Schweinsteiger?
I love Bastian Schweinsteiger because I think that he's a great player. I love the way that he plays, because he plays with a lot of like cool passing, smart passes, etc. And also some shots that he's taken and some goals that he's scored are just super memorable. The first time I watched him was in the 2006 World Cup, and he scored one of those goals from like 25, 30 yards out where he just rockets into the top corner. And I've liked him ever since, even though he's never played for a team that I support, Germany or Bayern Munich, or Chicago Fire for that matter. I've always liked him. And he also did play for Man United for a little bit. Always liked him.
So Schweinsteiger takes the penalty. Petrček dives the right way for it, hits the post, and it kind of bounces behind Petrček. And at just the perfect angle, because if it had bounced a little bit more inward, it could have gone in.
Right.
And if it bounced a little bit more outward, it could have hit Petrček and gone right back into
yep.
that goal.
Yep.
Which has happened, and it's terrible to watch yep. when that happens. But
Petrček did put his hands on that ball, though. He gets his fingertips to it, and he gives it the slightest touch. that ushers it to the post.
I cannot see that.
I know. It's hard to see, but let me see. Because different highlights have different angles of all those games. And I've seen an angle of that shot where you see his fingertips moving backwards because of the contact that the ball makes with him.
Then Petrček saves this goal.
Yes, he does.
It goes, hits the post, bounces just perfectly at that angle where it does not hit Čech or the goal line and goes inside. And Bastian Schweinsteiger misses his penalty. And for the first time, Chelsea have the chance to go ahead of Bayern.
In another sport, Chelsea had a checkmate in one. I had to use Czech's name in there. I've been waiting to say that all my life. They had a checkmate in one.
Did you write this when we started doing the podcast?
No.
The very first episode or something?
I thought about what we were going to title this episode. And to me, the man of the match is Petrček. And so I was going to name it Checkmate or something
along those lines. Definitely.
And so
it's 4-4. The last penalty kick is up, and it's Chelsea because they're second. So a Chelsea man steps up, and as soon as you see his face, what are you thinking, Mateus?
We're going home with the European trophy because this is the big man himself.
Didier Drogba. I heard a story that Drogba was supposed to go third, that Roberto Di Matteo wanted him to go third in this line.
I did not know this.
And Drogba told him, I'm Didier Drogba. I go fifth every time. I go fifth for my national team, and I go fifth here. And so Didier Drogba pushes himself into that fifth spot. Didier Drogba steps up. As soon as the camera goes to him, you kind of know. You can see his face. You can see his determination for that moment as he steps up. And you can almost I can imagine myself being a Chelsea player at this moment in time and thinking, oh, we're going to win this. It's that kind of feeling you get, especially for me, when I've seen Hazard step up to take penalties. Jorginho step up to take penalties.
You just know it's going to go in.
There's no doubt in your mind, even though there's a chance. There's 5% chance or whatever that it's not going to go in. It's not. It's going to go in.
Yeah.
It's going to go in. And when you see Drogba step up to take that penalty, you know it's going in. My favorite part about this penalty is that he stands maybe 2 feet away from the ball.
Yeah.
He's right next. It's the opposite of David Luiz. So it's Drogba who steps up. Ref blows the whistle. It's, how many steps does he take?
Two.
Takes two steps.
Is it two?
You count when he steps right next to the ball. So yeah, two.
Yeah.
He takes two steps. He takes one step, one tiny little step back. So taking two and a half.
Right.
Takes a little step back. One, two, plants his foot next to that ball and just right into the left-hand corner. He sinks it. Neuer does not get anywhere near this. He goes the complete wrong way.
Yep.
And I love that you can see him as he's diving, turning back in slow motion to look at the shot go past him. And you can see this look of horror on his face. Because this was so close to being Bayern's trophy. They had it.
They did.
When Mata missed the first penalty, they were ahead the entire time.
They scored in the 83rd minute of the game. This was just, they should have won it about 45 minutes. In real time, they should have won it about 45 minutes before this penalty is being taken.
If this was a simulation and you replayed this game, just reset everything back to the beginning and just replayed it again, 99 times out of 100, Bayern Munich win this.
Yeah, absolutely.
But Drogba takes the penalty. It goes right into the left corner. And he just, you could see before it even goes in, he's turning to run and scream and yell, and Chelsea have done it. They've won the Champions League final.
I got to make a confession here. I actually didn't watch the Didier Drogba penalty in real time because of what it meant, what it meant if it went in. I actually went next to my TV, got on my knees, turned away from it, and I was looking at my friend Fedor and listening to it, and I was going to know whether it went in or not based on his reaction and what I hear on the TV, because I just couldn't get myself to actually watch it. I was going to have a heart attack before he actually took it and scored it. And he scores it, and I'm pretty sure I covered as much distance as David Luiz did in his run-up when I was celebrating that goal.
You know, there's two types of people when it comes to penalties. There's the people who sit down and stare and watch every single second of it, and there's the people who cannot look at the screen at all. And I'm guessing you're the second.
No, I'm actually not. But for a brief moment, I became that. I became that just because for so long in that whole journey, and I'm not talking about just the final, but way before it, I was convinced that it wasn't going to happen. And every time, there's just a glimmer of hope And then we get to the next part, a glimmer of hope, we get to the next part. And now, for the first time ever, I'm like, oh, this is actually going to happen. But I do not want to experience the other side of it if it doesn't happen. And so it was just one of those moments where, I couldn't get myself to look at it. But I got up, ran around the house, and as my favorite commentator, Arlo White, would say, it was pandemonium at my house. So
it's 2012, May 19th. A date that will be seared in your memory and my memory.
Forever.
Forever. In every Chelsea fan's memory.
Yep.
Forever. Chelsea have won the Champions League final against every single odd. I'm sure some people made a ton of money that day.
Oh, yeah.
Just somebody predicted Didier Drogba scores the final penalty after extra time and gives Chelsea the final and the trophy and everything. Somebody predicted that.
Yep. And, I mean, there's so much about that moment that Didier Drogba kicked it, because, one, it was his very last kick for Chelsea at that point, because at the end of that season, he was leaving Chelsea. So with his last kick of the ball for the club, he would win the Champions League final. Amazing. Another picture that I have in my head is, you look at all the players who weren't taking the penalty. So they were in the center circle, gathered. They all had their hands on their, whoever was next to them, they all had their hands on one another's shoulders. They're watching it happen. And, you know, typically this is what happens at a penalty shootout. When it's won, if it's the keeper who saved it, to win it, all players run towards the keeper. If it's a player who scores to win it, all players run towards the one who just won the game. And that exact same thing happens. But there is one player who, as soon as it goes in, actually turns and starts running towards the Chelsea fans who are all the way on the other side of the field. And it was Frank Lampard. And it's just like, it goes in and he turns around and he just starts sprinting towards that other end of the field. And to me, so much of that game, I actually have to remember by rewatching highlights and things like that. But that picture of him in slow motion with both his hands out and running towards the Chelsea fans, just incredible. One of my favorite things that I've got to witness as a fan.
Your favorite player?
My favorite player. And it just shows you the relationship that he has and had with the club, with the fans, and how much winning it for the club meant to him. And now when we think about how he's the manager and how he would love to win it just as much as the fans would, I genuinely believe that that's the truth. I mean, many managers and players, they do celebrate winning a trophy. They do celebrate winning and certain achievements because it's their objective at the beginning of the season to be able to win those things. And it's their job. So it means they're doing their jobs well.
Their achievement. They've done it for themselves.
Exactly. But I don't know, just the way that he celebrated that, it felt a little bit more than that. And so, just one of my all-time favorite moments, just in soccer in general.
If that hasn't convinced you to rewatch this, and you haven't rewatched it yet, go back and rewatch this. Watch it twice. Watch it four times in a row. It deserves your attention.
It absolutely does, without a shadow of a doubt.
The cherry on top of all of this is because of some odd ruling that's no longer in place, but I believe it was that only four teams or five teams, there was a maximum amount of teams from each league who could be in the Champions League every year. So
four teams. Yep.
So for example, in the Premier League, four teams go, the top four go to the Champions League the next year or to the playoff round or whatever, but they go to the champion, they have the chance to play in the Champions League. But if a team wins the Champions League, they're automatically in the next year's Champions League because they've won it. They have the right to be there in the next year. Usually when a team wins the Champions League, they're in that top place. They're a good enough team to be there, to be in that place, so it doesn't kind of overlap. But because of Chelsea's tumultuous Premier League season, the moment they were not sitting in first, second, third, or fourth place, they were in sixth place at the time of this. So Chelsea win the Champions League, they're in sixth place, they're going to the Champions League, but only four teams can go. So what do?
You kick out the fourth.
The fourth team does not get to go to the Champions League. And which team was in fourth place?
Tottenham Hotspurs,
who had a season just good enough to be able to reach the Champions League. I don't believe they had ever been to the Champions League.
I don't believe so either. If they did, it would have been in the 90s or whatever. It was ages ago.
So Tottenham have their chance to be in the Champions League for the first time in either forever or in a very long time.
Right.
And they've had the season just barely good enough to do it. And Chelsea, against all odds, win the Champions League, knock Tottenham out, and manage to secure that Champions League for next year as well. So, cherry on top of an already great season.
And because of that, to this day, we are known as the only London club with a European trophy. Well, hey, this is the end of this episode for today. We want to thank you for joining us. We want to thank you for listening to us. And we also want to let you know how you can get in touch with us and maybe submit some topic ideas. We just finished this awesome topic of going through the Champions League journey of 2012. If you have another topic or a series idea that you might have, submit it, because you just might see us talking about it, or hear us talking about it, or listen to us talking about it.
The best way to get in touch with us is at our email. It is academyofblues@gmail.com. We're also on Instagram and Twitter.
That's right.
@academyofblues.
There's no .com there.
There's no podcast. There's no .com. It's just at Academy of Blues.
At Academy of Blues.
We should know this. I should know this.
You know this. It's fine.
I got the jitters, the post-match jitters.
Yeah. Hey, you've just had your finest performance in Champions League history. You're fine.
Yeah, it's the finale of Road to Champions League glory. It's all coming down, and the Premier League starts soon. So maybe we'll have one or two episodes before we have actual matches to review.
Right.
So if you'd like to see us discuss anything before the league starts, maybe we'll talk about before the league starts. I don't know. We don't know yet for next episode. Make sure to email us if you have any comments, concerns, questions, compliments. We're taking anything.
We'll take anything at this point. We never know how to finish these things.
No.
So we're just going to say this.
Bye.
I've been Maddie.
I've been Daniel.
And you have been listening to Academy of Blues, a Chelsea FC podcast.
See you next week.